Part 2. Feeling different, damaged, and overwhelmed. Chapter 5. A Mother's Sorrow. After I graduated as a social worker from the University of Washington, a senior center hired me as their activities director. Meanwhile, Steve, my husband, completed various surgical rotations. For his fourth year of training, he could do research in the university hospital lab or join the Peace Corps and serve as a surgeon in Blantyre, Malawi. I was eager to accompany him to Africa, even though we had a four-month-old daughter, Allison. She was born 1 month early, in August 1971, and was petite but healthy. Going to Africa with Steve as part of the Peace Corps appealed to my social work values. After graduating from college, I spent a summer in Nigeria with Operations Crossroads Africa and wanted to spend a year in another African country. After our memorable year in Malawi, we returned to Seattle and settled in a small rental house in the city's south end. In Malawi, our house had bars on the windows and solid exterior doors. The Europeans who lived in these homes before us feared being robbed. Back in the States, where crime was more prevalent, our rental house had a rear door with a glass window that someone could easily break, and picture windows without bars. But the danger to Allison was inside, not outside our house. Steve and I took chloroquine, an anti-malarial pill, every week in Malawi. When we returned to Seattle, we still needed to take the pills for 2 more weeks. I put 4 pills, 2 for each of us, in the pencil container on my desk in the den, perhaps thinking I would move them when I finished unpacking. Steve and I forgot to take the pills, and I forgot they were in the container on my desk. Allison, now 17 months old, was inquisitive. One day, she climbed onto the chair and then onto the desk, spilled the pencil container, and swallowed the 4 green pills. She stumbled, pale and glassy-eyed, out to where I sat in the living room. I did not know what could be the matter. In a panic, I called her pediatrician. The receptionist asked, "Can I put you on hold?" The standard question when someone else was on the line, but my reply was not the usual one. With my heart hammering in my chest and my body shaking, I cried out, "No, I can't wait!" I hung up and ran out of the house to the busy street, Allison lying heavily in my arms, her eyes shut and her skin pale blue. I can't remember if I waved to a passing car or if a passing driver noticed my distress and stopped for us. He drove quickly to the Veterans Hospital about a mile away and pulled up to the front entrance. I ran inside with Allison in my arms. The hospital staff took her from me and rushed her into the emergency room. A code blue sounded. Medical personnel rushed from all parts of the hospital to help, including Steve, who was a surgical resident there. They got Allison breathing on a respirator, but she did not wake up. An ambulance took her to Children's Hospital, where she died a few days later from a chloroquine overdose. When Allison stumbled into the living room, I had no idea what was wrong. I only learned from the hospital that she had chloroquine in her system, and it was only then that I remembered where I had put the pills. Why hadn't I put them in a safer place? I can only speculate. Sometimes people with this ADHD do not know where to put something. We have not worked out how to organize our possessions, so we impulsively put things down anywhere that seems to work as a temporary holding place. I might have been unpacking our suitcases, and when I came across the pills, I could not think of a better place to put them. With ADHD, because of forgetfulness or being too busy, the temporary place becomes the permanent place. As a physician, Steve felt responsible that he had not remembered the pills and had not asked me where I had stored them. "I should have remembered," he said. "I should have asked you about them." Steve was so grief-stricken that he talked of leaving the residency program. Yet he kept working at the hospital while I spent the days in the house crying. He recalls feeling detached from his work, unable to bring energy to tasks he usually loved. Even 5 months after Allison's death, his supervisors noted his apathy and asked whether he would like to take a leave of absence from the residency program. We felt we had failed as parents and clung to each other. I was 3 months pregnant with our second child and did not want to give birth. I wondered if I could ever love another child. Could I keep another child safe? I read in the newspaper about a woman who left her child in a hot car and the child died. The police arrested the woman and charged her with a crime. I heard about another woman who left her child unattended in the bathtub when she went to answer the phone. Her child drowned, and the mother was charged with negligence. Why wasn't I charged with a crime? Did I have special protection because Steve was training to be a surgeon? I was guilty, but going to prison would not bring back my daughter. I spent weeks in front of the TV, distracted by watching the Nixon impeachment hearings. Steve worked long hours at the hospital, leaving me alone to cry. I could not stop crying, but at least crying tired me out so I could fall asleep. Dr. Michael Rothenberg, a Children's Hospital staff psychiatrist, spent several sessions with us. When we told him we would never recover from her death, he said, "You have been wounded. There will always be a scar, but you will recover." When we told him that we could not go on, he helped us realize that we could and that going on was what we needed to do. I didn't dream all my life, and when I was told that everyone dreams, I thought I must have dreams but not remember them. After Allison died, I had a dream, one I will never forget. I watched in horror as she fell down a well, and I could not save her. I woke shaking. Dr. Rothenberg helped me understand the dream was part of my grief process. Again, he persuaded us that the best way forward was to keep our lives on track. A woman once told the Buddha about her troublesome life. He told her to take a journey and knock on every door she passed to see if she could find a single person who did not have troubles or sorrows in life. The woman traveled for many years and knocked on thousands of doors, but never found a home free of sorrow. The Buddha's teaching made me realize that everyone has burdens to bear. Until Allison's death, I expected my life always to be wonderful. After her death, I lost that expectation. We only started to believe a year and several months after Allison's death that we could make a new life for ourselves. Steve started his last surgical rotation in a community clinic in Eastern Washington. We were in a new place, and it felt like a new beginning. Spring had arrived with sunshine and warmth. I helped care for our neighbor's two young girls, along with Charles, our 9-month-old son, and Steve's work days were less stressful. We played tennis on the courts that adjoined our apartment and hiked on the nearby hills covered with yellow balsam root. It was here in Wenatchee that we began to look forward to the next stage of our lives. We would be living in Fort Knox, Kentucky for 2 years while Steve fulfilled his military commitment. While at Fort Knox, I met a friend's mother whose child had died years earlier. She told me, "I could never have gotten through my child's death without my religion." I said, "Whatever religious beliefs I once had vanished. I can't believe in a God who let my daughter die." I didn't miss him and stayed away from church and religion for most of my life. Occasionally, when things were rough, I thought about God testing Job. Was he testing me because I didn't believe in him? Whenever I had the desire to pray, a voice in my head said, "You don't believe in God, so don't pray." And I did not. Many years later, I found a Unitarian Universalist congregation in Tacoma and became a member. The church is a spiritual community without religious dogma. There, I was open about my ADHD and the struggles I had in my life, and the congregation accepted me. I wish I had found this church much earlier. Only after my diagnosis did I understand what caused Allison's death. My ADHD symptoms, disorganization, impulsivity, procrastination, distraction, and forgetfulness, explain my failure to protect my daughter. I thought back to those other women, the one who left her child in the hot car and the one who left her child in a bathtub. I realized that these are the tragic mistakes people with undiagnosed ADHD might make. I imagined both these women had undiagnosed ADHD and felt sorry for them. Myth: people who medicate their ADHD seek the easy way out. Fact: untreated ADHD can lead to several adverse outcomes, while treatment with ADHD medications reduces accidental injuries and bone fractures, motor vehicle crashes, traumatic brain injury, burn injuries, emergency room admissions, suicide, premature death, teenage pregnancy, criminality, depression, drug and alcohol abuse, cigarette smoking, educational underachievement, sexually transmitted infections,